Hi there, I'm K-Town, and on this edition of Mysterious Radio.
Your point of view, and you're smart and educated, and you come at it with like a sound mind and almost like a calming point of view, but at the same time you're willing to talk about anything, and I think that's like very refreshing.
Okay, let me ask you something. You guys have always gravitated towards the paranormal. I want to know, like, was it because you guys experienced so many things growing up, or were you talking about it? Was your family open to it when you were little? I'm just interested in how the thought process came about, because some families don't talk about it, even if the phenomena happens inside their home. So I'm wondering, was that happening to you?
I didn't experience anything till a little bit later. I want to say like my early teenage years. I was just always drawn to it. And I think it was very accepted in our family because we grew up in a religious household where there was a heaven and a hell and a spirit world. And the religion we grew up in specifically believes in a lot of that spiritual nature. And so I think it wasn't necessarily frowned upon to believe in kind of a more esoteric world.
What about you, Tina? Were you ever exposed? Did you ever experience anything weird or see anything weird or strange?
Yeah, I would say, in my childhood, the only thing that comes to mind is one experience, where I saw what appeared to be, I know it was a human form, right? There was human forms moving around in my neighbor's house. And so we called the police, and when they checked it out, there was no one there. They were just like, I don't even want to say shadows, because they were so fluid and they moved so much, but definitely human forms. And so my neighbors were out of town and we called the police to come check it out. And as a child, that's really the only, I would say, paranormal, if it was that experience that I had,
Oh yeah, I remember
again,
that. Yeah.
Yeah, do you remember that? And mom and dad were so mad. I would say our dad, although Angie says it's correct that, we did grow up in a household that believes in an afterlife and believes in the spiritual realm, I would say he is definitely not as open to these things as we are. So was it, talked about in our household when we were young? Not necessarily, I would say no more than any other household as far as believing in things that are typically what you think of as paranormal, like the Loch Ness Monster or aliens, things like that. So I would definitely say my parents weren't really into that. Would you, Ange?
No, I think the only reason they were was because we were like a Bible-based Book of Mormon family, and that involves a lot of spirituality. Other than that, I don't think they would have been drawn to it at all.
Where did you guys grow up? Can you tell me that? What city?
Provo, Utah.
Got you. And go ahead.
So heavily, heavily religious community.
Are you still Mormon? You mind if I ask you that?
I am not. My sister is.
And that's interesting about your neighbors. How is that the last time, first and last time you ever saw anything like that?
No. That was the first.
Yeah, that was the first when I was young. And I definitely, there was like four of us little kids that were sleeping out on the balcony that we had a perfect view into my neighbor's house. And my neighbors were all out of town. And one of my little friends said, "Hey, look, there's people in their house." And I looked over and there was maybe three, and they were running amok in the house. Like you could see them, and their movement was so fluid. And I didn't see, all I saw though was shadow, meaning like I couldn't see any color. I couldn't see any, it was silhouette, but it was definitely like moving much differently than we were moving, because we were just sitting there kind of entranced. And so my parents called the police hesitantly because they thought we were just kids with big imaginations, right? And the police did a check and there was nothing in there. So I'd say that was my first experience when I thought, well, what did we see? In my, 8-year-old mind trying to figure out what it was we did see, because three of us were sure definite that we saw it.
Yeah, I remember that too. And that was definitely my first moment of like, oh my gosh, maybe things aren't what they seem, you know? And then after that, Tina and I both have had quite a few paranormal experiences. And I would say Tina's are even more profound than mine.
You always wonder what's happening in your house. And I know that I set up a camera one time in a studio that I had. And it was just to see if anybody would actually, you know, come in it or disturb our things or whatever, because it was a huge shared building. And we caught a ball of light, like manifest in the middle of the room. And it just shot out of the screen. And, you know, after that, we were like, no, we're not going to, you know, use that studio anymore. But it's just creepy. And I won't put another inside camera in my house to see what's going on anymore after that experience, because it just creeps me out. Think about what's happening or moving.
Yeah, sometimes the less you know, the better, huh?
That's exactly. I don't want to know. Okay, so tell me about something else that happened to you guys.
Well, I'll start. So I was obsessed with like shows. I'm sure you guys were the same, child of the 80s, like Unsolved Mysteries. I would wait for the unexplained one. You know how they all had categories? It was like fraud, murder, unexplained. I would wait for the unexplained ones. And that was like my entry into like the world of UFOs and aliens. And then what was that other series, Tina, that was on TV where it would show like short stories of...
Amazing Tales.
Maybe something like that. Not Tales from the Crypt. It was another one like that, though.
The Twilight Zone.
Maybe it was that. And I was always very drawn to that stuff. So I don't know. When I tell these stories that I went through, I am definitely open to the idea that the power of the mind and what you focus on can also manifest in your reality. So I don't necessarily know what these things I've seen are. I remember the first time I saw something. I had watched an episode of Unsolved Mysteries and I was terrified. And I would always pray like, please, God, no, don't let me see any evil spirits, no dark spirits. You know, that was kind of my religious point of view. And I do believe in dark and light realm. I think people have seen too many things for there not to be something to it. But I remember going to bed and I was probably 11 years old and I was at my grandma's house and I was laying in bed and I was petrified of what I had just watched. And I looked over and I saw like a really dark, dark shadow figure right next to my bed. And even at, you know, 11 years old, I told myself it was a million other things than what I actually thought it could be. And I think our logical minds always kick in and want to talk us out of it. But I definitely know whatever it was, even if it was a figment of my imagination, there was a dark, dark shadow figure right next to my bed. And so that was my very first experience.
It was just standing there.
Yeah. And it wasn't super defined. It was almost more like an outline of a shape. And I think that was almost, I mean, who I am today would look back at that and go, that was probably due to the energy I was like resonating at in that moment, because there was so much fear around me. I was so afraid of seeing bad spirits my whole life. And so there was a part of me that was like, maybe I needed to see that to be like, it's okay. Like I'm in control. I'm fine. Or maybe I was just manifesting that in my world. I'm not sure, you know.
Well, did that come from like, maybe, were your parents letting you like watch scary movies? And I'm just trying to
see. Yeah. Not my father. My mother. Well, I was the youngest child. So I think by the time I came around, like my mom was probably tired, to be fair. And so I think if she was going to watch a show, I was going to be in the room because she was looking after me. And I think, you know, she was a great mother, but I think like at 8 years old, I probably saw The Exorcist for the first time, but it was on TV. So it was edited, but I definitely saw movies I probably shouldn't have seen at that age. But again, like most mothers were surviving. I mean, they were raising five kids back then and cooking meals and doing all the things, you know.
Let me ask you something. And I wonder if that's probably where you were, you know, thinking your thought process was coming from, that you were scared of spirits. You were watching scary movies. You know what I'm saying? I mean, as a kid, who would blame you for that?
Right.
Did you ever notice anything like strange in the sky out there? Did your parents or any, do you know if anybody saw any like strange UFO sightings or?
Not me till later in life. Tina has an incredible story about that.
Hey, all right, Tina, tell us about it.
That is true. you know, in some ways I hesitate to tell this story because it's so incredible that it sounds, you know, almost like I'm making it up. It's almost embarrassing for me to tell it because I've never heard a story quite as interesting as my own. I don't know. I don't know how else to say it other than if I were going to make this up, I would make it much more subtle than it obviously was. But I do have a friend who witnessed this event too, although I haven't talked to her in years. But we were driving down to Vegas. It was January of 94, I do believe. It was either 93 or 94. And I had in no way, like probably the thing I was least interested in was aliens and UFOs. That didn't capture my attention like a little kid with the cryptids, you know, like, I don't know, like the Loch Ness Monster or Sasquatch. That was much more interesting to me. So I had no real desire to see a UFO. But as we were driving, we were on the freeway. It was about 3 a.m. We had left before the rest of my family did to get down to my cousin's wedding. And I was in high school and I had brought a high school friend with me. My aunt was driving us. It had snowed. So it was kind of, although it was 3 a.m., it was kind of a bright night because the snow was glowing, you know? So we had good visibility, but my friend or my aunt pointed it out first and they just said, "What's that? Look," you know? And we were going, it was right outside of Fillmore. I don't know exactly how far. So from Provo, you hit Fillmore, maybe after about 2 or 3 hours on your way to Vegas. And we were outside of Fillmore and she said, "Look," and I looked over the mountaintop. And again, it was kind of a bright snowy light. And I could see little red lights, but attached to them were definitely like round, I guess, as they would say, saucer shaped objects, right? And they were in pairs of two. And one of them would do some acrobatic maneuver. It was extremely fluid. It was like, it wasn't like a clunky machine. It was like it had life, you know. One would do a loop-de-loo and the one right behind it, maybe a split second later, would do the exact same thing. And we just said, "What are those?" You know, we were just curious, like, what is this we're actually seeing? And then I know this is incredible, but then my aunt or my friend, I don't remember who, said, "Oh my gosh, it's on the other side too." There was two mountain ranges, one to the right and one to the left on this stretch of freeway. And we could see over the top of them that these machines, I would say, I can't remember the exact number. There was at least four and there was up to seven or eight. I can't remember the exact number, but there were pairs of them on each side of each mountain range. And, you know, we just thought, well, this is really different. Like, we know these things don't move like anything we know moves. They look alive, right? And then all of a sudden, I didn't see it coming. And this is the most incredible part of the story. I didn't see it coming at all. But as we're going on one side of the freeway, and you know how there is not a median, but that, I don't know the word, but that place in between the freeway that divides it by, like, I'd say maybe 15, 20 feet. Anyway.
The median.
Yeah, maybe it is a median. As clearly as I've ever seen anything, there was a UFO hovering on the other side, so the opposite side of the freeway, going the same direction we were, just hovering on the other side with us as we were driving down the freeway. And the only thing that separated us was probably 20 to 30 feet, right? Because,
holy shit. Wow.
Yeah. So it was the other side of the freeway and the scope was enormous. Like, it was probably the size of a 12 to 1500 square foot house. It was big. But there was nothing. It was so calming. Like, I don't know how else to say it. We felt no fear. There was nothing about it that felt threatening. It almost was like, let's show these guys something fun, you know, was kind of what came to mind. But it just hovered there with us. And we just looked out the window. Like,
it's beside on the other side, like going in the same direction.
Yes, it was going. Wow. Yes. Like, it was giving us a show. Like, it was like, "Oh my goodness, let's show these girls something fun, something they'll remember."
Yeah.
I remember just thinking it had a playful energy, you know.
Was there other cars on the road at the same time?
It was 3 a.m. driving in a semi snowstorm, like not a storm because the snow had stopped, but it had just been snowing and it was January. So no, there was one other car after we saw what we saw. And I'll get to that in a minute. But there was one other truck that had a huge, like, flashlight shining it up to the sky. So we know at least one other person saw it, but we never stopped and talked to that person. So anyway, it was just hovering with us. Like I said, it was kind of a pewter silvery color. And again, if I were making this up, I would never say this because it sounds like a child's point of view, but it had multicolored panel of lights going around the center of it. And they were kind of glowing, you know? And after it hovered with us, I'd say maybe 30 seconds, probably, it started spinning like a top spins as fast as you can imagine. And all the lights started blurring together into kind of one color. And then it spun like a top and then instantly just shot up into the sky. Boom. No Wow. sound, nothing other than a completely fluid motion. And then it shot up straight up into the sky. And I looked and I saw it. And then it just went to the left. It shot up straight and then veered to the left and it was gone up into the clouds.
That is amazing. You couldn't see like people or beings or anything in there?
No, I couldn't. Nothing like that. But, you know, it was something that I don't know. I can't explain it, you know, and my dad's a skeptic with these sort of things. And he said, well, I think it was just military. And I said, Dad, that could be true. I'm not saying it's not. I didn't see any alien beings. But don't you think if this technology, again, I'm 48, then I was 18, so, or 17. I said, don't you think if this technology was real back then, we'd all have one in our garage by now, as this is like 30 years later. So.
And what's interesting about that is Tina, I know Tina's character. She's not a liar. Like the minute she told me that night, I've always believed her. But what's interesting is that stretch of land is right in between Area 52 and Area 51. So there are quite a few sightings on that free off I-15 on that stretch of land between Utah and Las Vegas.
That is really, really interesting there. And your aunt saw that. She was the one driving, right? She was the one driving?
Yeah.
What did she say about it? What would your aunt, did she ever talk about it?
Yeah, this is a little bit of a bitter topic. when it first happened, my aunt was the driver, right? So she was going what, like 75, 80 on the freeway. So she had to drive and pay attention while we saw the vast majority of everything else. But instead of, it's frustrating me because she's now in like 84 maybe. But back when it first happened, she was like, yeah, like, I don't know what it was we saw, meaning like, you know, I don't know if it was earthbound or if it was something from beyond our galaxy. I'm not going to claim what it was, but definitely we saw something. But as she's gotten older, it's become, I saw something, and that's all she can say about it. And that is so frustrating. But like I said, I do have another friend who witnessed the whole thing. And she's 1 year younger than me. So
yeah, because Tina will go into like great detail trying to explain the story. And then she'll look to our aunt to back her up and she'll just say, I saw something.
It's a bit uncomfortable.
But it's kind of a family joke now. It's funny.
It's the stigma on it. You know, it's why. It's the huge stigma about people that see things. You know, they be called, you know, they're called crazy and, you know, you just right. make it up or making up things and things like that. But these are perfectly sane people, honest people. Good people that see things and then they're not encouraged to come forward with it. But go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and I'm comfortable with it now because I see so many more experiences and it feels like, I don't know, even the government is possibly on the verge of, if not on the verge, Angie looks into this stuff a little more than I do. She knows more about it, but I don't know. I feel like it's not so stigmatized anymore. So I'm comfortable coming out and talking about it, but I've probably only told maybe 15 people in my whole life, just because it's not something I want to bring up and talk about typically. So
now, Angie, that is a fantastic story, by the way. I mean,
yeah,
that is
good,
amazing.
Huh?
Really is amazing. Okay, Angie, let's talk about you took a trip and I'm wondering how you actually got there because Skinwalker is like a huge deal. I mean, especially to paranormal people. People that look into these types of things happening, Skinwalker is the. It seems like it's the focal point of a lot of weird and strange things. It's just mind blowing,
right?
Phenomenon happening there. So much so that some of the top scientists and things have been asked to go out there and try and figure out what's happening. So, do you know how far out, before we talk about your trip there, how do you know how far out the phenomenon goes from that ranch? I mean, is it the town itself that people are experiencing things, or is it mainly right there on the property? Do you know?
So there are a lot of, that's kind of the Vernal area of Utah, and there are a lot of UFO sightings there. I want to say, like, in that town, it's something, and I'm off, this is a rough estimation, but it's something I read that's like one out of every 15 people has had a UFO sighting. So that town is...
What's the name of the town?
It's near Vernal. Vernal's the main town in that area. The little towns around it, I don't know what they're called. I know people who own the properties next to the actual Skinwalker Ranch also see a lot of phenomena, but... It's an interesting story. I've always wanted to go there. It's like top secret. It's really hard to get in. And I was on a TV show called The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. And one night I was like kind of bitching to my husband because it drives me crazy that I don't know the mysteries of the universe. I go and I research. The more I research, I realize the less I know. And it makes me crazy, basically. So, I was kind of bitching to my husband one night, like, why don't I know what's happening? What, you know, like, why won't the owners of Skinwalker Ranch call me and invite me to go? Like, just kind of being a victim. Like, I need to know more. I need somebody to like hook me up with information, just venting. Well, the next day, this is wild. Kristen, I didn't know her at the time. She's now a dear friend, who is the wife of the owner of Skinwalker Ranch, DM'd me and said, hey, I watched The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. We have, because they have a television show as well called The Secrets of Skinwalker Ranch. We have producers in common. They vouched for you, said that, you know, because producers see everything. They see the people who are crazy. And, you know, she said they vouched for you and said you're a big fan of the ranch and the show. I'd love to invite you and your husband to come to the ranch. And like, as you can imagine, I was like, what? Like, talk about the power of manifestation, right? So I was over the moon. So over Labor Day, the Fugles, who own the ranch, invited us to go and with a group, a small group of people, to go take a tour of the ranch. And one of the best days of my life, total bucket list. And it was amazing. I mean, we got there first. They also brought some rock star. A lot of people are fans of the ranch, and so they'll reach out to try to get a tour. And Brandon, the owner, is very selective on who he lets in because, first of all, it's a liability. Really dangerous things have happened there to people and have caused them to have health problems, have caused tumors, really wild stories. And so he has to be careful who he lets in. So these people, these rock stars who had reached out, I think reached out, I'm not sure how that came together. He felt like they were a right fit. And so it was this small group of my husband and I, these rock stars, Brandon and Kristen, and then like, you know, the people from the show who live on the ranch. And I'm going, man, you know, we're here with these rock stars. If shit goes down, it's happening to them, you know, because they've got all that intense energy. And it's funny because they were like lovely and wonderful. And the only person who had a paranormal experience was my husband. Which is interesting because Brandon says it's typically the biggest skeptic that the energy there will mess with because they know you're not a believer. And there's almost like, from what I gathered and kind of what I felt, the there has to be a certain amount of respect for the energy there. And if you show the respect, you're fine. If you're skeptical, if you're a naysayer, or if you're negative, which my husband wasn't negative, but he was definitely skeptical. I think they want to show you or prove to you that you're wrong, you know? And so it was fascinating. We toured the place. We sat down and, you know, they're very science-based there. The owner is not into conspiracy. He's like, I need to prove with science, which is why he has a full-time scientist there, that this is the... It actually is the most scientifically studied paranormal hotspot on Earth. I personally believe it's a portal, or whatever, a wormhole or something where dimensions are thin based off all the stories I've read, the research I've done, and based and talking to the scientists, seeing their research and talking to the owners, that's the conclusion I've come to. You know, whether that's true or not, I have no idea. But it was fascinating. So we saw the research and they showed us a lot of infrared, a lot of videos of UFOs that they've captured there because it's always on surveillance. And then we took the tour to the different homesteads. There's three homesteads. One of them is extremely negative. And so my friend, Kristen, who's the wife of the owner, she doesn't go in there. She doesn't like the energy. And then one of the ladies who lives on the ranch, who is psychic, also won't go in there because she has seen some really gnarly stuff in there. I went in, I kind of prayed up and brought my best energy and went in and felt safe. But one thing to mention before we started the tour, the owner, I thought was, it's pretty cool. He starts with a prayer to protect everybody. And so I kind of took that mentality going into Homestead 3. And I was fine. I got something interesting on video. I don't know what it is. It's just something really black flies across the screen. Could be a bat. I put it in slow motion many, many times, and I can't make out what it is. It looks bigger than a bat, bigger than a bird. I didn't see it with my naked eye. I saw it later in my footage. So that was interesting. But at the end of the tour, we're standing on the mesa above the entire ranch looking over, and there's like eight of us standing there. And my husband was on the very end, and someone really grabs his arm to get around him. And he looks over and nobody's there. And the next closest person to him is me, and I'm 6 feet away. So that really tripped him out. And he was such a skeptic, not a believer. When he heard Tina's UFO story, he was always like, he'd always tease her and be like, you know, I think you saw something, but I don't know if you know what it was or whatever. And after that experience, it completely opened his mind. So he was freaking out. He had to shake it all off. And anyway, it was a really cool experience. And I'm forever grateful to the Fugles for like allowing me to go onto that sacred space of theirs. And hopefully I get to go back sometime. But after that, I've had a handful of paranormal experiences.
Okay, so we're going to talk about that too. But let me bring you back to the ranch there. That's an incredible opportunity,
yeah,
you know, that you were afforded to go on the ranch because from my knowledge, they used to, I mean, no one could ever step foot on that ranch unless you were part of that scientific team.
Right.
It's nice that he allowed you to go on that tour with, you know, a small group of people. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Did you see anything strange in the sky? Because that seems to happen all the time. Like this guy, there, you know, this guy's able to capture all kinds of like weird orbs flying around and just strange stuff all the time on that show. Did you guys see anything?
Oh, I mean, believe me, I tried so hard. I was just like stretching my eyes as hard as they could go. I did not, unfortunately, but Brandon said 6 months after he bought the ranch, and I think he said this on the show, so I feel comfortable sharing it. He was a skeptic. I mean, he says he bought it kind of to disprove it and thought it would be fun, you know? And I'm like, well, that's an expensive project just to disprove. And so he went out and 6 months into owning the ranch, I believe it was, he was standing out there and out of nowhere. And I believe he has a picture. I think I've seen the picture. There's this massive, he said like 75 foot silver UFO, just like right in front of his face. And one of the guys who was with him was a scientist he had invited and his bodyguard, because this scientist, you know, needed protection because he knew a lot of information. And his bodyguard, when this UFO showed up, actually passed out and had to be hospitalized in intensive care, I want to say for like 2 weeks after that experience. And once again, he was kind of the rough, tough, gruff skeptic. And he's the one who had the worst experience. So
I saw that.
He shared stories of his experiences with things in the sky there. My one time going, I unfortunately didn't see anything in the sky, but I really wanted to. I was begging to be abducted.
Don't say that. Don't say that. It's been some incredibly you know, creepy and scary things that have happened to people on that property. Yeah, Brandon's own experience, because he showed it on the show, like the craft that he captured.
Yeah.
When he was standing out there, it's like it wanted to prove, listen, you don't believe it? here it is, you know, and that was amazing. Okay, let me ask you something about, I'm just wondering, can you tell us who were the other guests?
Oh, I mean, yes, and I'll only say it because I have nothing bad to say about them. They were wonderful and so kind. It was the Nine Inch Nails.
Gotcha.
That band. Right. It was that band, and then and they allowed us to take pictures with them and post them, so they were public about it. And his wife, Trent Reznor's wife, Mari Queen, who's just an absolute sweetheart. They were awesome. But you know, you go into it going, man, these dark rock stars, if anything bad's going to happen, that's the energy. And like, they were amazing and lovely. And like, it was funny. And then my husband is the one who ended up having the experience. So,
so Brendan has one living on the property.
Well,
full-time.
And I don't know that that was actually intentional. So the one great thing about Brandon is he has really long, long lasting friendships from like high school and from his LDS mission that he served. His companion from, you know, 25 years ago is one of the guys that is on the ranch 24/7. He's like security there. So it's kind of sweet. He has this group of like people that he is employed to look over the ranch that are also on the show. It's actually Dragon I'm talking about from the show. They're like old friends. And so it's kind of this group of his friends from years and years ago. And I think it's not Travis. Who's the other guy on the show? It's his wife. They live in one of the homesteads part-time and she's psychic, but he didn't hire her for that reason. She just has those gifts.
Did she tell you anything that happened to her?
Yeah. She said at Homestead 3, she has seen like really intense beings there. She can really feel the energy there very strongly. And she said she saw these, I want to say, I might be slaughtering this. I think they were purple or orange beans with like really like fiery, glowy energy coming off their heads. And it wasn't positive. She just felt like it's, there's too much intense energy there for her to feel comfortable going in.
What was their opinion? I mean, you talked to his wife. Did you ever have a conversation with her and did she tell you like she thought the energy there was something to be frightened of, or what was her thoughts about?
Yeah, Homestead 3, she's not a fan of at all. And she says the energy sometimes follows people home. So when she goes home, Homestead 3 is the third, there's three houses on the property and that's the third one. And I don't know why or what's happened there, but that's the one that the psychic stays away from as well. And
like the one that's like ran down, no one can.
They all are, but yeah. Well, the first one's not. People live in the first one, but yeah, the Homestead 2 and 3 are both pretty run down. But she, when she goes home, she actually will take off her boots or her sneakers and her jacket and leave them at the door. She doesn't even take them in her house because she doesn't want to pull that energy into the house. And Kristen's very like intuitive and deep and spiritual. So she feels those things, you know. I think I would say it's fair to say Brandon's more scientific. And so when he goes home, he's not so worried about that stuff. Or she's more like, I'm going to leave this at the door. I'm not bringing this in my house. But she said they've had guests there that have said something followed them home and they saw something later that night. Or, you know, it's just an energy you have to be very cautious of and respectful of.
That's what I wouldn't want to happen. Okay. I'd love to go to the ranch, but I don't want to bring anything back. You know what I mean?
I know, right?
That does happen to people. That really happens to
people.
Did you do any type of protection for yourself, you and your husband, before you went on the ranch?
Prayer. I wore my crosses too. I wore two, just, you know, symbology. I wore two crosses and we prayed up. And when I left, I prayed and I cleared, you know, like no negative, you know, Jesus Christ, no negative energy around me. Just, you know, the typical Christian prayer to get rid of dark energy. And then, you know, I also like esoteric and I kind of like have fun with like sage and crystals. And so I got home and I kind of saged the place. But I had two interesting experiences after that. And I don't know if they're connected because they were a few months later.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, I find that the more meditative and connected and grounded I am, the more I'm having supernatural experiences. Like I've had five in my life and three of them were within like a year a year span. And that's when, after I'd gone to the ranch and I was much more meditative and present, that these things happened. And it was fascinating. So one night I was in my bed, and I think I had just, I was also kind of dabbling in the Dr. Stephen Greer CE5 contact meditation. And we actually filmed, I had an alien party on Housewives. And we filmed the alien party, and I only invited the girls that I thought would bring positive energy, because, you know, that stuff is very dependent on energy.
Who did you invite?
And I didn't let them drink. I made them be sober, and we had, you know, we had fun with it. I did a real theme. The catering was all alien space inspired. It was really cute. But then we went in the backyard. We did the Dr. Stephen Greer CE5 meditation, and stuff actually showed up, like in our cameras, not naked eye, but on camera with the filming crew. And then in our cameras, some weird stuff showed up. I don't know what it was. It looked interdimensional. Tina's seen the photos before.
Yeah, describe it for me.
Yeah, Tina, what would you say? Did you hear what she wants you to describe?
Yes, I did. And quite frankly, I don't remember him that well. It's been a couple years now, so I don't remember him well enough to describe.
Well, I'll describe him. So Dr. Greer does say, you know, you don't always see it in the naked eye. Sometimes you'll see it on film or footage you take or in the camera. So before we started the meditation, I had everyone take out their cameras. Nothing was on the screens, right? Nothing showed up. We did the meditation, pulled out our cameras. What looked like a saucer, quite honestly, it looked like a legit saucer, but it was almost a little transparent. It did not look tangible. It was like more interdimensional, kind of how people see spirits. And then in one of the photos, there was like this thing in the corner that almost looked like a clown face. Like it was like almost like a being, an interdimensional being. And then there was another one that was amazing that was like, it had two eyes at the top, and then it had all these colors underneath it. It was actually so, so interesting and profound that all the producers went and tried this method on their own, like on their free time. And they actually had really cool experiences too. Crazy thing is, we got UFOs on film and the scene got cut. So it never made it onto the show, which was wild. But that was kind of the moment I was like, all right, this show isn't for me. If nobody's fighting, it's not making it on scene. So so that was one of my experiences. And then one night I was in bed, I want to say maybe several months later, and I look over and there's like a full-on being standing next to my bed. And honestly, all I can say, it's so weird. I don't know what it was. I'm not saying it was a ghost or an alien. I don't know. I just know I saw something, and it looked like Squidward from SpongeBob.
Wow.
I know. I went to Pilates the next day. I'm like, guys, I don't care if you think I'm crazy. I saw Squidward in my bedroom last night. And it was really tall. I want to say it was like an 8-foot tall something with kind of like an elephant-y nose. It was kind of more of the outline. I couldn't see it super clear. And it was wearing like a long black cloak, but it did not feel scary at all. Like for whatever reason, I have learned to not fear that stuff, because I think I also believe that if you do, you're going to pull in that energy. And I don't know if that's accurate. That's just kind of what I tell myself to feel better about this stuff. So yeah, I saw Squidward, no SpongeBob, unfortunately. And then he was gone like 3 seconds later. It was super fast.
Was your husband in there?
No. So we both kind of are insomniacs, and he snores really loud. So I sent him in the, other room that night. he was in the guest bedroom that night. And then about 3 days later, I'm laying in bed and I kind of see this almost swirling, kind of lightish white glowy light. Almost like a mini galaxy looking type thing, kind of swirling around my ceiling in my bedroom. And I was like, huh, that's weird. And I just kind of kept staring. I did the whole like cartoon eye rub and then look again, still there. I was like, okay, it's not like disruptive. It's just kind of small. And I thought maybe it was the light. I turn on the light, turn off, wasn't that. So I just went to bed. The next morning I woke up and my phone was completely dead. And it was on the charger. Not even like I had to do a hard reboot. It wasn't even like it shut off. It was like I had to do that hard, hard reboot. And one common story that I know Brandon and Kristen deal with at the ranch is they'll take people and their phone will completely die, where they have to like go back to the Apple store, AT&T, to get it reset. And that was my experience. I had to do like a hard reboot. So I called Kristen the next morning and I was like, okay, so remember those cell phone stories you told me about? She's like, yeah. And I said, that's happened in my bedroom. She was like, yeah, it happens all the time with cell phones.
Now that is interesting. Something's draining or killing phones, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know what it was. I can't say what it was. And again, I'm also not closed off to the idea that that's like the power of our mind and what we believe is out there. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Do you think maybe the ranch has exposed you to some type of energy that's made you more open to seeing things like that? Or what are your thoughts on it?
Possibly. I think more than anything, my intuition tells me it's more of my meditative state. And at the time, I was listening to a lot of Dolores Cannon. And so I was very in tune with that whole idea that you can connect with beings and you can get answers and information. And so I don't know if that played into it as well.
Are you trying to open up your third eye?
I am. Oh, I would love to. I mean, I would love to connect with positive, enlightened spirits and beings.
That's the thing, though. If you open up your third eye and see the bad stuff, too, you can't just...
I know. And that's the scary thing, because I'm, you know, the Christian girl in me is still like, you know, listening to what the Bible tells you and don't mess with that stuff. And so that's also the challenge I deal with, because I really want to be open to that world. But I'm also like, I don't want to let in the dark side, too.
Do you believe in like going to psychic mediums? I mean, is that against your religion? Is that something that your religion wouldn't condone or when you were growing up?
I mean, technically it's not. I'm not religious anymore, but you know, if you're a Bible believing person, it's technically not condoned. I'm not super strict on that stuff. I've definitely been to several mediums. I have a medium I'll talk to maybe once every 2 years. And just for fun, I don't take it as gospel, because I also think spirits can be very deceptive and trick and manipulate people as well.
What about currently? Like, Tina, have you experienced anything lately? Have you seen anything?
It's interesting because Angie talked about seeing the thing in her room was robed. And the only time I've witnessed, well, other than when I was a child and the story I already talked about, but the only time I've witnessed what I would deem as spirits or ghosts, they were in robes twice. So... And they were disproportionately tall.
Yeah, same.
Disproportionately tall. So I don't know if it's the effect of our world's gravity, that it doesn't have a pull on them. No pun intended. I just don't know, you know. But my dad, who's a skeptic, he's, of course, open to the spiritual. He does believe in spirits, but he's a skeptic to, like, ghosts and aliens and things like that in the way that we typically describe them, right? So I was with my family and we were, again, it was another snowy, bad weather day. We were in Germany at Neuschwanstein Castle, and because of the weather and it was November, so it was not tourist season. And I am a trip Nazi, which means I always try to, you know, do everything according to plan. So we got there earlier than almost everyone else. To see, I guess, to avoid lines, but there wasn't lines anyway. And the snow was lightly falling. It wasn't intense, but it was a slushy, snowy day. There was probably an accumulation of maybe like a third to a half of an inch on the ground and on the surfaces of the castle. But after we toured the castle, we were waiting to get on the little carriage to give us a ride back. We were waiting for the horses. And my mom actually said, look up there. Somebody's up there, right? And so me, my mom, my dad, and I don't know if our neighbors who went with us saw this, but on the precipice of maybe the, I don't know if it was the first story, the second, the third, but it was really high because castles were not built with the same specifications as houses are now, but it was quite high. There was this disproportionately tall man in a robe. I think it was a man. I couldn't really see their face, but it was definitely a human figure, standing just on the precipice, on the very edge on a snowy day, right? And he just stood there. And I just thought, this guy's disproportionately tall. What is he doing? He could fall. Like, this could be his death. How did he even get up there? And then it kind of dawned on me, I'm not sure I'm seeing a man, you know, like, this guy doesn't look quite like other men. Why is he in a robe from a different time period? It was a brown robe, you know? Anyway, I just watched him for a few minutes. My dad saw him, my mom saw him, and I saw him. And then he didn't have, my dad, you know, as we've talked about it through the years, said, I'm sure it was just a fix-it guy. And I said, Dad, a 10-foot fix-it guy in a monk robe in the snow on the precipice of Neuschwanstein Castle without tools. You know, and
that's so my dad. That is so my dad.
Yeah. And the funny thing is I'm a believer in Occam's razor. Usually the simplest explanation is the correct explanation. But Angie said something funny because my sister is also a skeptic. And she said, oh, yeah, well, Occam's razor. And my sister Angie said, well, Occam's razor in this case is a ghost. And I was like, agreed. So
that's funny how your dad tries to rationalize everything.
Oh, yeah. Ahead. Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. In his world, it just doesn't make sense. So anyway, so that was that. I mean, we just kind of, I don't remember seeing this. I think that I lost my attention because he was just standing there and there was nothing else I could get out of him. He wasn't see-through. He was very solid. Couldn't see a face, but definitely saw, you know, everything else. My mom remembers him walking away. She watched as he walked away and I did not. So that's how he left. But
and like the ledge he was on was so high. And didn't you say it was only like a foot, Tina, in the snow?
A foot of snow? Is that what you're asking?
The part he was walking on was only like a foot wide.
Oh, yeah. He was on the very precipice. Like, In a snowy day, it was slippery. And that roof is, you know, like, no, there's no reason someone would be up there dressed in a monk robe without a safety belt. I don't know the purpose, unless they were filming some movie and they needed a 10-foot tall monk. I don't know. I can't explain it.
Well, and what's interesting is so Tina and I went and did research, and I've listened to endless whistleblowers and, victims of, you know, ritual abuse. And a lot of them talk about castles in Germany where a lot of these rituals take place. And I've heard at least two or three whistleblowers talk about they do a lot of these rituals in Neuschwanstein Castle. And then maybe you know about that other castle that was Himmler's castle or something. Have you heard about that?
Where is the castle at? I've been to Germany. I lived there for 2 years. But what was the city?
It's in Bavaria. It's that big Disney castle.
Yeah. Neuschwanstein. It's in I think it's in Fussen, Fussen.
And so, you know, you hear these people talk about how they do these kind of dark magic rituals in these castles. I don't know if that's true or not. That's just what I've heard whistleblowers say. It starts to kind of make sense, you know, that there could be spirits there. I don't know.
Is that the castle that the Disney castle was modeled?
Oh, yeah.
I've been there. Yep.
Yeah, that's the cliche castle where if I was going to make it up, I wouldn't do it at the most cliche castle on the planet, you know?
Yeah. It's beautiful. I mean, I lived in Germany for 2 years. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. All right, go ahead. Tell me what else happened.
I Googled afterwards because I was so curious what we had seen. So I Googled any, you know, a lot of haunted castles came up, but I couldn't find any stories, or at least I was very hard pressed to find any stories about that specific castle. So that was kind of interesting. I Googled like monk death at Neuschwanstein or, you know, anything I could to kind of make sense of it, but I didn't find anything. But Angie said, of course, what she just talked about, she was able to find something that might have explained it. So
now that is interesting. But your dad saw it too.
Yes, he did. And he's like Angie's husband. He's a huge skeptic. It's like he needs to be able to explain it from a logical perspective. And so it's kind of blown his mind. He just doesn't know. He tries to rationalize it away.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because he's a very spiritual person.
No, like, he really is. Religious. Yeah, he really is. Extremely religious. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that is an interesting story there. Do you, have you ever lived in a house as an adult and had some strange experience besides the one Angie told me about? But what about you, Tina, in your own home?
You know, This is kind of an interesting story, but then when I found out a little more, I could explain it maybe a little better. But one time there was this foul sulfur smell at the edge of our counter, right? And I said, "Mom, come here. This smells terrible right here." And I was standing in the kitchen at the end of the counter. And so she came, and right as she walked into the sulfur smell, I kid you not, her phone, which was locked, started playing this creepy little jingle with children singing. And it was like, da, 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 like really upbeat and like maybe turn of the century creepy children songs. And I'm like, "Mom, what is that?" She goes, "I did not touch my phone," you know? And so I don't know, is that a coincidence? I said, "Were you listening to anything? Children singing?" She said, "Not at all." I said, "Why did your phone go off singing a creepy children's song when you walked into this sulfur smell?" You know,
that gave me chills. That gave me chills. Right? That is creepy. Wow.
It was so creepy. And then it was just that tiny little thing. But then I realized that this is kind of silly, but our washing machine at that time kind of sometimes would give off a sulfur smell. But this was, you know, stronger than I've ever smelled it. And this was in the kitchen, and the sulfur smell in the laundry room, I don't know, was probably 20 feet away. And so could it have been that? Absolutely. But I still can't explain why her phone started, you know, making creepy noises. So
that is creepy. So creepy. Yeah. Do you guys, do you plan on exploring it further, like maybe touring places like that? I'm wondering if you're going to... Oh, somebody's laughing. Who was that, Tina?
It's me, because me and Angie have always talked about doing a monster tour of Europe. We're going to go to Loch Ness. Where else are we going, Ange?
Transylvania.
Transylvania.
And it's funny because our oldest sister, she just wants to go on a nice, lovely Jane Austen tour.
So do I.
And we're like, no, we're going to go on the Dark Monster tour. I'm actually, I have an autistic son, so my hands are pretty full, but I'm starting to look at, into becoming a ufologist. So I think I'm going to take that course so that I can have more of an expertise, you know, in that.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. That's awesome. Go ahead.
What Angie talked about earlier also applies to me and how I view it. I worry about inviting the dark in, you know? So like how you said that, you know, when you have that third eye, you can't choose what you invite in. Some of it's good, some of it's not. And so I have to kind of pace myself. I don't want to get too involved to where I go down a rabbit hole and invite dark entities or presences into my life. So for me, it's with cautious, I'm very conservative and cautious about how much I want to explore into these things, but they seem to find me anyway, you know, whether I'm trying to or not, they kind of just seem to find me.
Tina's always kind of had her third eye partially open because she hasn't even shared all her stories.
Let me ask you something. Do you feel like there's anything that people should particularly be paying attention to this happening in the world right now?
I think there is definitely a spiritual war going on that a lot of people are aware of and unaware of. And I think now than ever is the time to really sharpen your discernment.
Oh, yes.
On who and what you can trust and what the energy behind them is.
Yep. I would agree with that. There's a lot of emphasis on the scientific world for a reason, obviously, right? And it's good and it's important. But I think that we neglect, I don't know, like our intuition, our gut feelings, the spiritual realm, kind of what Angie was talking about. There really is like forces of good and evil around us. So,
and it might just be that because we've experienced a handful of paranormal things that it's easier for us to see it that way. I understand people who haven't. I understand why they're highly skeptical and don't see the world that way.
Of course, being sensitive to everyone from every walk of life and what they believe.
Let me ask you something. My last question I wanted to ask you how do you go about sourcing your information? I mean, how do you know? I mean, so many people saying different things.
For me, it started with the Bible and my spiritual journey on this earth. And then, so it started with religion. Now I study everything. I study Jacques Vallée. I study Dolores Cannon. I study, there's so many. Right now I'm reading a book on Antarctica's hidden history and a lot of the UFOs that were crafted down there and how that plays into our world today. I mean, I cannot tell you how much information I consume. The hard thing is with this topic, there's not a lot of proof. So I constantly consume and I end up not empty-handed. I've got like a wealth of knowledge in my brain. I just don't know what's real or not. That's where kind of discernment kicks in.
Are UFOs real?
I think UFOs are absolutely real. I don't know yet if I think we have a secret space program that has gone on for 75 years, maybe, that they have such advanced technology that they've been hiding. And it could be as simple as that. You know, I don't know that it is alien craft.
Yeah.
But I also do believe in extraterrestrials. I don't know if they're coming from outer space or if they are interdimensional or if they are inner Earth. I don't know. Like, I've read so many ideas on that topic that I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah, that's a tough one. It's a deep rabbit hole. But I mean, I definitely believe in UFOs, obviously, because I've seen them. But just like Angie said, that doesn't, I can describe my experience, but I can't, you know, I can't tell you where it was from or why, but I'm very open-minded to the idea that there are other worlds beyond our galaxy. I'm very open-minded to that, but who knows?
I'm truly grateful for your time to sit down and tell us about your experiences. If you go on a tour, like you said, like to Europe or wherever you guys decide to go, if you send me pictures or something like that, I'd love to post those if you don't mind.
Yeah, for sure. We'd love to. And I'm happy to send you the photos we took from that alien party meditation I did too.
Definitely tell me about that and send that to me.
And thank you so much for giving us a safe space to talk about this stuff. I mean, I think this is the first time we've told these stories publicly, so we appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you so much. You've been great to work with.
Thank you. Many blessings to both you, Angie and Tina, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Likewise.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.